Now, Sam Donaldson's life is about to change, and so is Washington.
Mr. President, Iraq says...
The polls show that a lot of American people just simply don't believe you.
Excuse me, but if you don't want to answer my question, I understand, but may I try another one then?
How can you justify this duplicity?
I've lost my voice, Sam. I can't talk. I wish Sam would lose his.
Sam Donaldson, there with Presidents Clinton and Reagan. In addition to his lengthy tenure at the White House and his long run as co-host of This Week, Donaldson covered Vietnam, Watergate, and all but one national political convention since 1964. He's now decided to cut back after 42 years with ABC News, which gives him time today to visit with us here in Studio 3A. If you'd like to talk to him about how Washington's changed, his many memorable reports, or his decision to step back from full-time work, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Well, there's a conversation also at our website that's at npr.org, and click on Talk of the Nation. Of course, Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is still with us here in the studio as well. Sam Donaldson, now ABC News contributor. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Neil, it's a pleasure. And if I'd actually lost my voice, as Ronald Reagan said he wished, I don't know what I would have done all these years. I couldn't have paid the mortgage. All I know how to do is talk.
That's talk. And how much of your job involved reading, learning how to read newspapers? That's a skill in less and less demand.
Well, that also was a requirement of the job, because I don't mind admitting to people that most of the stuff that we covered on ABC, we got the stories from reading the newspapers in the morning. Yes, when I covered the White House, the story was what the president did and what the press secretary said and all of that. But let's face it, without print media, and we're awfully worried, I think all of us, about the way it's going, we don't have the resources to do the original reporting that they did for us.
Is that the biggest change? You've been in Washington a long time.
Well, it's one of them. But, of course, the change in Washington, I think, is the change in the climate. These things, I suppose, go in cycles. But when I first came here, February of 1961, I was very fortunate. I worked for a local station, but still I'd go down. They'd send me down to the Congress and the White House and all of that. And I'd watch these Senate debates, people very passionate, arguing positions. But I never heard anyone call anyone a name. And you know the lore. It was true. Afterward, they'd get together and have a drink.
And did that begin to change with Vietnam?
Yes, I think Vietnam was a great poisoner for everything. Lyndon Johnson didn't pay for the war, and we began an inflation cycle, which culminated with the Fed having to wring it out with that horrible 20% interest rates that went up and a 10.8% unemployment rate. Dr. Volcker did his medicine. And also the climate from the standpoint of the way we treat each other. I think a lot of it can go back to the great divisiveness of the Vietnam War.
It's astonishing to think back to those days and remembering some of the giants, you know, Senator Fulbright and people like that who were holding hearings, and their surprise at the vitriol in the country when hundreds of thousands of people would show up in the streets of Washington, D.C.
Well, you know what I say to people? I came of age right after World War II, or a few years afterwards, and we were then the—excuse me for using the expression—the big dog. Yes, the Soviets had some nuclear weapons eventually, but other than that, they were the third-rate power. And America was used to having its way. We had our way. And as the years went by, and Vietnam was one of the first sobering examples, we began to realize that we couldn't just have our way because we wanted to. Right now, as you know, President Obama is in London. Still, we're the most powerful nation in the world in almost every respect. And yet, he doesn't have the ability to command the stage as the American presidents once did when I covered those summits.
Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. Again, if you'd like to talk with Sam Donaldson, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And let's start with Roger in Chicago.
Hey, Sam. It's Roger in Chicago.
Hey, Roger. It's Sam in Washington.
All right. I'm 61 years old.
You're a child. I'm 75. But go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, well, that 14 years put me in a spot to watch you get hammered by a number of presidents when you were pursuing the truth.
Well, sometimes I deserved it, I have to admit.
With the advent of all these talk shows and their popularity, where there's instant news analysis, have we lost our ability to really understand events and evaluate them because we have no time dedicated to mulling them over, to thinking them through and processing them. We just have people talking off the top of their head.
I think you're onto something, Roger. I mean, this two-edged sword that technology has given us, more ability to have everyone get in on the act and do it, as you point out, so quickly, I think on balance, and certainly after it all sifts out, the edge of the sword that is good will be the one that we really think is important. But at the moment, trying to sift it out is very, very difficult. And when the blogosphere, for instance, gets in on the idea of wanting to get someone for either misdeeds or suspected misdeeds, that person can be gone in 2 or 3 weeks, fired, without any hearing and without any opportunity to really have people, as you pointed out, think about it.
Hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Roger.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Sam, here's a question. Many Republicans saying that, and actually Hillary Clinton supporters said this too, that many of the media, much of the media is in the tank for Barack Obama. Many on the left said that the media didn't ask George W. Bush the right questions about Iraq. How do you see the relationship between the White House press corps and the president?
Well, without using the pejorative in the tank, I mean, I have to defend my brethren and myself against that. I think it's quite true. For instance, President Obama is enjoying a honeymoon at the moment. Everybody understands that this great, huge crisis was one that he didn't create. I mean, he inherited. And so people are giving him some running room. And he has, for many obvious reasons, come to the presidency with an historic win to his back. But I say to people who complain about the White House press corps right now, because I think they're a bunch of good people, just wait a while. All presidents begin to get in trouble, and all presidents begin to get to the point where they could be criticized fairly. My cell phone is going off. I should have turned it off. I never use it. And I'm sure that it is Rudy Giuliani's wife calling me. But in any event, I have turned it on now. In any event, they'll start boring in. This last press conference he held, if you think about it, they were tougher, the White House press corps, than the first press conference. He'll hold another one before too long, and Katie bar the door.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, stop it.
That's Katie right now.
No.
Here's an email that we have from John in Atlantic City. Is it true that the Muppet Show Anchorman was based on Sam Donaldson?
Well, I hope not. I mean, I don't know. I hear a lot of stories about myself. Some have a kernel of truth, but a lot of them are just wildly exaggerated, I have to tell you. But in a sense, I guess, maybe it's flattering. You know what they say, imitation? But wait a second, a Muppet? I have to think about that, Neil.
Here's another one, this one from Marie. Please comment on how negative campaigning and general dirty tricks, as well as the challenging of election results, have or have not evolved over the decades of your journalism
career. They've gotten much, much better. And when I say better, I deplore it. We all deplore it. But, of course, as we all know, because they work often, not always, but often, that's why they're used. But ever since the great negative people in the late 80s discovered people like Willie Horton,
the famous ad run against
ad
Michael
of
Dukakis.
A black man who had been released on a weekend and he raped, pillaged, and burned and all of that. The negative advertising has gotten more sophisticated. Now, sometimes you don't even recognize it for the terrible slander that it puts on people. I wish we could do away with it. It's like saying, I wish we could do away with money in campaigning, but it's not possible.
Let's get Michael on the line from San Andreas in California.
Hi. Mr. Donaldson, thank you.
Can you call me Sam, Michael?
Well, we can now.
Yes, please.
Can you go back in your memory time machine and describe those moments the last week of the Richard Nixon administration that stand out most vividly in your mind?
Well, you know about the all, how he, wanted to pray with Henry Kissinger, and I talked to the pictures of the other presidents. And Richard Nixon is a tragic figure. I mean, if Shakespeare were around, he could do real justice to him, I suppose. Like other presidents I've known, he was a dichotomy. There was such an impressive side to him. And then there was the other side, which saw enemies everywhere, and his motto was, do unto them before they have a chance to do unto you. It was a very sad thing for the country. His defense was that he was trying to protect his men. But in effect, even though he wasn't tried in court and therefore judged guilty by a jury of his peers, he was committing a major felony for which Americans go to jail every day, obstruction of justice. And he deserved the fate that he received.
I wonder, did you get a chance to see either the play or the movie Frost Nixon?
No, I haven't seen either one. I hope to do that. I'll tell you something. I'm not a... The movie... Nixon that Oliver Stone put out. I'm not a great fan of Oliver Stone. He's such a great movie maker, but that's why I'm not a great fan, because he distorts reality. But it looks like it could be, as in the case of JFK, Lyndon Johnson organized the assassination of John Kennedy. No, rubbish. In the case of Nixon, that movie was pretty close to the man I remember.
Really?
Yeah.
And getting back to Michael's question, was there one moment in that last week of the Nixon presidency that you'll remember for the rest of your life?
Well, it may have been 2 weeks, if you will, because events escalated. But 7:04, 28th of July, 1974, Peter Rodino, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, said to his clerk, a man named Klein, call the roll. Mr. Donahue, aye. Mr. Brooks, aye. Mr. Kastenmeier, aye. Mr. Edwards, aye. I used to be able to call all 38 members of the Judiciary Committee on Article 1, the impeachment of Richard Nixon. That, to me, was just a historic moment.
Clearly, his memory's slipping.
I can't do them all now. Trent Lott voted no, okay?
And got elected to the Senate.
Right.
Michael, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate
it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Our guest, of course, in the unlikely event you don't recognize his voice, is now ABC News contributor Sam Donaldson. Of course, still with us is Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, and our political junkie with us every Wednesday. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Andy on the line. Andy calling from Cleveland.
Hi, Mr. Donaldson. Thank you so much for all the good years. I grew up right at the end of the Concord era, and so I saw I've seen every one of my news giants sort of retire and move on. So I'd like to hear your opinion on the rise in my 30s of the news jesters of Jon Stewart and Colbert and Mr. Rudin.
Well, wait a second. Ken, are you John Stewart brothers?
He doesn't get paid as much as John Stewart.
Well, you know, I think it's okay. And when I say okay, a lot of people in my age say, oh, well, you know, they're listening to John Stewart instead of reading the New York Times or listening to us. But particularly young people are going to find their news where they get it. And Stewart has this wonderful ability to puncture pomposity and to, I think he goes too far once in a while, but then who doesn't? Excuse me. and I think it's just fine. Now, when I say just fine, enjoy them. But if that's all you get, well, hey, if all you do is watch or listen to ABC, you're deprived. In other words, you have to have a wide range of sources. But go ahead and watch Stewart and the late night shows and all the rest.
Well, that's where I listen to NPR.
for the human.
Sam, but Stewart and Colbert are comedians. What happens when you have people just attuned to Fox News or MSNBC, where there's such a clear ideology, where there's almost not even news anymore?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, I say to everybody, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but not their own set of facts. And that's why, I mean, you got to check around, because everyone can make a mistake. The people that are inhabiting those shows, most of them, not all, don't care about the facts. They have an ideology that they want to preach to the choir. It's like going to the Baptist church on Sunday. I was raised in the Baptist church, dipped in the drainage ditch at age 11 because we didn't have a baptistry in southern rural New Mexico. So I know about this. And you go because you like the preacher, because he says exactly what you want to hear and what you believe. Fine. I think that's great on Sunday or on Saturday if you go to the synagogue or whatever your house of faith. But the point is, in looking at the issues today and trying to figure out who the good guys and the bad guys are and all of that, if you'd have a wide range of opinion, how are you going to know? If you only listen to the preacher that Rush Limbaugh or Oberman, you know, you're not going to know. So listen to everybody. Let all flowers bloom.
Now let's go with Bob. Bob's calling from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, you've asked a lot of hard questions in all your years. I wonder which question you regret not asking the most.
Well, it's usually the question that, had I been smart enough to ask, might have produced either an answer that enlightened people about what, let's say, a president intended for us, or if it was a non-answer, alerted people that there might be a problem there. Of course, one of my favorite questions is the hard-hitting question I asked Ronald Reagan in the early 80s when we were in a deep recession then and his popularity was down. And so when he called me at a primetime news conference, I pulled myself up to my full pomposity and I said, Mr. President, tonight you have blamed this continuing recession on mistakes of the past and the Congress. Doesn't any of the blame belong to you? Yes, he said, for many years I was a Democrat. Oh, gosh. That's a toughie. I sat right down.
Bob, thanks very much for the
call.
Thank
you very much.
Appreciate it. Sam, you're a cancer survivor. You've been very public about this, your experience in the mid-90s. How are you doing today? Did that play any part in your decision?
Fine. I'm 14 years out from a stage 3 melanoma. I had one lymph node involved, and only one, which was a good thing, because if you look at the tables, if you have three or more, now you can still survive, but you got a tougher time then. Cancer, you know, when it strikes, is always stalking. You may be cancer-free for a long time. Ask women who have been cancer-free from breast cancer for 15, 20 years, and all of a sudden, hello, we got to get rid of this disease. And this is one thing, Neil and Ken, that we can throw money at. I used to cover the Congress, and I'd listen to debates on the House floor. Well, you can't cure this problem by throwing money at it. Oh, yes, you can, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get more money. And thank goodness President Obama, in his budget, on one year, President Bush's budget, I hope he didn't know about it, actually cut real money. We don't argue about the rate of increase being cut. Actually cut real dollars from NIH so that they had down to about 11% of peer-reviewed proposals to study whether the thing that worked on the rats can work on human beings. That's a shame. I think it's a crime. Excuse me for getting in my soapbox, but you gave me the opportunity, Colin.
I did. There's a reason those buildings up in Bethesda are named after Warren Magnuson and Claude Pepper.
Yeah, Maggie.
Very briefly, Sam, what are you going to be doing?
Well, I'm still working for ABC. I haven't retired, cut back, but I still go in once a month on George Stephanopoulos' great Sunday show, which I used to do with Cokie and, of course, the great David Brinkley. I do a lot of radio, and I was on Good Morning America the other morning. They call on me once in a while. Well, tell us, Guru. I mean, what do you make of the president? Well, I'd say he was doing okay, but he's got to watch himself, and with that, they pay me? This is stealing.
Sam Donaldson stealing money from ABC News, now an ABC News contributor. Nice to have you with us today.
Neil, thanks a lot.
Good luck,
Ken.
Tomorrow, we launch a new series, What Works? Realistic, successful solutions to everyday problems. We'll start with a new way to think about and build nursing homes, not for patients, but for people. Join us for that. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.